5 o'clock in Salford. How you doing this Tuesday? Are you well? Have you had a good day? Thanks for finding me. You are with the Richie Allen Radio Show. About to begin. I'm going to be with you for the best part of an hour, 90 minutes, maybe beyond that. Lots to talk about today. And during the period we are together, I do hope you get in touch with me via Twitter. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's big stories. Let the show begin.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Double busy today. I was double busy. I was like a cockney today. Double busy. Lots going on in my life today. It is, what is it? It is the 9th of February 2021, Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Live, as I've already said, from the great city of Salford in the northwest of the UK. You and I today flying solo. There is an enormous amount of things, stuff to talk about, so we might as well get on with it. I will be monitoring the old Twitter as we go along, and I expect to hear from you monitoring the old Twitter. A lot of interesting things on richieallen.co.uk. Do check it out. If you haven't before, check it out. The new website. Articles being uploaded there daily, and you can interact, whatever that means. You can interact, by God, have your say on there. I will talk about one or two of those articles in a moment, not about my writing them, but the content matter, the subject matter, some very interesting stuff going on today. It is freezing, I know. I've been saying that now for I don't know how many days in a row. It's freezing. You're telling me you're freezing as well. How cold is it? Well, I can tell you, it's freezing. Not as much snow as we'd been promised by the media. They said the beast from the east too would bring a massive deluge of snow, but we haven't seen so much snow. But it is cold. It's so cold that my balls have become ovaries. It is so cold that I saw a traveller in an estate agent's. It's so bloody cold I saw an Amish man buying an electric blanket. It's so cold this morning I had to chisel the dog off a lamppost. And it's even so cold the cops are tasing each other. Yeah. Bloody cold. It's that wind chill factor, I believe. Yeah. Tasing each other. Unlikely. Very interesting story out of New York City. I know that you probably stay in touch with Dr. Vernon Coleman through his website, vernoncoleman.com. And if you do, and if you were reading my website this morning, you'll know that a man died only 25 minutes after getting a COVID-19 vaccination in New York yesterday morning. Now, the man was in his 70s. He got the jab at Manhattan's Jacob Javits Convention Center. And shortly after receiving it, he would have been, first of all, once he got it, they would have asked him to sit down for 15 minutes to make sure there was no immediate negative reaction. Upon there being no immediate negative reaction, they would allow him to put his coat on and to depart. As he was leaving the centre, he collapsed and died. It hasn't been revealed now. Hang on. I wasn't able to determine this afternoon, but I wasn't looking very hard. This afternoon, it must be said. This morning, they hadn't released the details in terms of which vaccine he had received. That info might now be in the public domain. But this morning, they were not releasing that information. Rather bizarrely, the New York State Health Commissioner, a guy called Dr. Howard Zucker, said that initial indications are that the man didn't have any allergic reaction to the vaccine. Will you excuse me a moment while I have a little glass of water and clear my throat? Off mic. Excuse me, there you are. Yes, this is important, right? Very shortly after the man passed away, Howard Zucker from New York State Health Commission, he is the commissioner, he said the initial indications are that the man didn't have any allergic reaction to the vaccine. How could he possibly know that, absent an autopsy? And we learned as well that on Saturday, a woman called Dreeny Keys, a 58-year-old woman from Virginia, died very shortly after receiving the Pfizer vaccine. Her daughter has reported that her mum began vomiting, struggled to breathe, and then died only hours later. And again, amazingly, officials in Virginia are saying that the vaccine isn't to blame. I'm not saying the vaccine is to blame. That would be wrong of me. But how could they possibly know? Mad stuff. VernonColeman.com, because he is collating all the data he can from the UK, from the US, from Europe, and anywhere else the vaccine has been rolled out. I am not taking a vaccine under any circumstances, and I have advised those close to me to do the same, not to have it. I wouldn't tell you or dream of recommending to you what you should do, because that's not my business. That's a decision for you. Also on the website today, interesting for my Manchester listeners, surge testing began in Manchester today. What is surge testing, Baldy? I hear you ask. I know you probably know. Surge testing is when they decide that a variant, a deadly variant potentially, has reared its ugly head in a community. So they rush to the community and give households lots and lots and lots of testing kits and ask the households to test themselves and to return the kits. More than 10,000 tests. It began today, by the way. This began today in South Manchester, in Fallowfield, in Hume, in Mossside and Wally Range. Okay? More than 10,000 tests. Why? Well, because in two unconnected households, they found the E484K strain, which is the Kent mutation. So they've sent thousands of tests and hundreds of volunteers to South Manchester so that they can go house to house, offering tests house to house. Wow. Eh? I don't believe, of course, this has got anything to do with finding viral mutations. And I said as much on the radio show today. This is conjecture. It's my opinion. This is the biggest psychological operation ever waged against people in this country. They're using the fear of getting a virus that is harmless to nearly everybody to acclimatise you and me to a new reality. A testing, jabbing reality. It's the testing, jabbing era. They tell you about a new, previously unknown variant. And you feel fine. You feel hunky-dory. You feel tickety-boo. You've not even got a tickle at the back of your throat. There's not even a tickle on the tongue. Look down, there's Tickle Town, and there's the River Tum. You've not got anything wrong with you, but they tell you, we found the Daddy Long Legs variant, we found a Caterpillar variant, we found the Crazy Legs Crane variant in Stockport or in Basingstoke or in I don't know, and they send up the tests and you will administer the tests and do what you're told. This is madness. 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 As they're claiming that there are now 4,000 variants circumnavigating the globe. But we shouldn't worry, they say, because the new technology means they can just adjust even or tweak the vaccine that we've got already so that it works on the new variant. Testing and jabbing. This is the testing and jabbing era. We had the bronze era. We had the silver era. We had the Renaissance period. We had the Middle Ages. Now we have the testing and jabbing. That's how it's going to be. Hey, by the way, more on these dreaded variants to come a little bit later on in the programme. Also today, but we won't be covering it, Donald Trump's second impeachment trial begins. I know that my American listeners, or at least some of them, will be paying close attention to this. I won't be, because I couldn't give an arse. I couldn't give a bag of arses, let alone my own. And did you see this last night? This is scary stuff, isn't it? Police Scotland decided to arrest a chap called Joseph Kelly. Joseph Kelly, who I think is a Republican, right? And he's got, I don't know, he's probably a Celtic fan. Because when the late Captain Sir Tom Moore passed away, Joseph Kelly tweeted, and I quote, "The only good Brit soldier is a deed one. Burn, old fella, burn." So he was arrested for being an idiot. Yes, spooky, you better believe it. So he's going to appear at Lanark Sheriff Court, accused of communications offences. This is important. I've talked about this on the programme. This is about the new hate crime bill in Scotland, which is being rolled out by the Justice Secretary, Humza Yousaf. Now, if I was a right-winger, if I was a Tommy Robinson supporter, I'd be saying to my Scottish listeners, Humza Yousaf doesn't sound very Scottish to me. But I'm not right-wing and I'm not xenophobic. Or maybe I am. Maybe I'm just pretending not to be. Humza Yousaf, it doesn't matter where his ancestors came from. He's a dickhead. Humza Yousaf is rolling out this new hate crime bill in Scotland. And one of the things he wants to bring about is he wants to remove the dwelling defence. The dwelling defence. He wants to remove having private conversations in your home from your daily lives. Yes. He said to MSPs, and I've covered this on the Richie Allen radio show, he said, are we comfortable giving a defence to somebody whose behaviour is threatening? Are we saying it's justified because that is in the home? We must protect children from hearing hateful things in their homes, said Humza Yousaf. Oh, dickhead doesn't even begin to cover it. Scotland is a basket case. Joseph Kelly is a world-class dipstick. Of course he is. But is he entitled to be a dipstick? You're damn right he is. Aren't we all entitled to be complete arseholes, aren't we? Yes, we are. I've been there. I might be there again real soon, behaving badly. When I have a little bit too much to drink and I might say something astonishing. Before too long, you won't be able to call somebody an arsehole or a fuckwit on the internet before you're getting a knock on the door from the old bill. Mad times. Mad times. It is 12 and a half minutes past 5. I think I'm going to be with you for the duration because there's so much to get through. And because I'm going to be with you for the duration, I think it's time that we have a tune. Let's have a tune to kick off the programme. You are listening to the BBG, not the BBC. My name is Richie Allen, broadcasting live from Salford in Greater Manchester. Lots to talk about. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. Do send me a tweet. I want to hear what you have to say. Oh, yeah. Classic 90s dance music here from D-Light. This is Groove is in the Heart. Back in a minute. Music from D-Light. Groove is in the Heart on the Richie Allen radio show, the BBG. Gaz Bob tweeted me. How you doing, Gaz Bob? We know we're in a pile of doo-doo. I think even we should focus on what we can do about it, Richie. Should we, Gaz Bob? What would you like to do about it, old son? Do tell me. I'm all ears, mate. What would you like to do about the current situation? Tell me if we should be talking about solutions to it. Because I think I've given the fucking solution to it 700,000 fucking times. The solution to it is very straightforward. Is that we take a leaf out of Luke's book, as in Luke from Kate and Luke's Cafe. Is that we disobey. Is that every company, every business in the country has the balls, has the cojones, has the testicle to open its businesses and to recall its staff. Is that men and women have the courage to get on public transport and not wear a mask. That people return to the way they used to live and ignore the orders of cretinous morons like Matt Hancock. The solution is very simple. Very simple, I would say, Gaz Bob. And I'm not having a go at you in particular, pal. I'm having a go at everybody else who sits around doing fuck all, saying, oh, guys like you should tell us the solution. You are the solution, you and nobody else. Luke is the solution. In the bar and cafe in Burnage, Luke is his own solution. Stop sitting around waiting for a saviour to lead you to victory, because it ain't going to fucking happen. Not now, not tomorrow, not next week, not next month. You've got to do something about it. You. That's you, by the way, not just Gaz Bob, that's you. You. William tweets, Richie, my boss has been trying to push me to get a test. I don't have any symptoms. So can't get a test. He wants to make sure I'm okay as I visit customers' premises. I am a telecoms engineer. madness, says William. William, there is no legal basis for your boss to compel you to get a test. If you don't want to get a test, mate, don't get a test. But I would also seek advice. Don't just take my word from it. Speak to an employment solicitor, maybe. Hi to my friend John in New York. How you doing, John? BBG Tower signal coming across the pond, nice and clear, loud and strong. Thanks, John. Good to hear from you, pal. Lots of tweets coming in. Do tweet me. It's at BBG Richie. I mean it when I say it. The solution. It's obvious. It's obvious. It just requires a little bit of moxie, a little bit of gumption, a little bit of daring do. Doesn't it? Am I right? I'm right. If you think I'm wrong, tweet me and I will read your tweets out. Here is the BBC News. Travellers hoping to stay in quarantine hotels in England will be charged £1,750 for their stay, says Health Secretary Matt Hancock today. The measures, which will come into force next Monday, apply to UK and Irish residents returning from 33 red list countries. They love the number 33, don't they? Anyway, if you fail to quarantine in a government-sanctioned hotel for 10 days, you could get a fine of up to £10,000. If you lie or try to conceal that you've been to a red list country, you might end up in prison for 10 years. I wrote about this today on richieallen.co.uk. Here is the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, addressing Parliament today.
From Monday, all international arrivals, whether under home quarantine or hotel quarantine, will be required by law to take further PCR tests on day 2 and day 8 of that quarantine. Passengers will have to book these tests through our online portal before they travel. Anyone planning to travel to the UK from Monday needs to book these tests, and the online portal will go live on Thursday. If either of these post-arrival tests comes back positive, they'll have to quarantine for a further 10 days from the date of the test and will, of course, be offered any NHS treatment that's necessary. Third, Mr. Speaker, we'll be backing this new system with strong enforcement of both home quarantine and hotel quarantine. People who flout these rules are putting us all at risk. Passenger carriers will have a duty in law to make sure that passengers have signed up for these new arrangements before they travel and will be fined if they don't. And we'll be putting in place tough fines for people who don't comply. This includes a £1,000 penalty for any international arrival who fails to take a mandatory test, a £2,000 penalty to any international arrival who fails to take the second mandatory test, as well as automatically extending their quarantine period to 14 days, and a £5,000 fixed penalty notice, rising to £10,000 for arrivals who fail to quarantine in a designated hotel. We're also coming down hard on people who provide false information on the passenger locator form. Anyone who lies on the passenger locator form and tries to conceal that they've been in a country on the red list in the 10 days before arrival here will face a prison sentence of up to 10 years.
Dun, dun, dun. 10 years. Now, the travel industry is understandably terrified that this is going to be rolled out not just for folks coming from the 33 red list countries, but eventually from every country. You understand their concerns? They're thinking that people won't go away on their summer hauls, on their hauliers, because if people are compelled to quarantine when they come back from anywhere, and it might be rolled out, they would have to factor into their holiday cost the price of quarantining when they get back. We're going to have to wait and see on that one, but I wouldn't hold my breath if I was a travel industry boss. They're probably going to say, as we approach the summer, if you're going to Spain, the Canaries, Lanzarote, Portugal, the Algarve, if you're going to France, you've got to quarantine when you come back. They might do. They've gone further in Scotland. Nicola Sturgeon said to Hancock, "I'll see your tyranny and I will raise it. Everyone arriving in Scotland on an international flight from anywhere next Monday will have to quarantine in a hotel for 10 days. The Scottish Government said it would be block booking 1,300 rooms at six hotels near the country's airports. Wow. Here's her Transport Secretary, Michael Matheson, speaking this lunchtime from the Scottish Parliament and explaining why they've gone further than Matt Hancock.
The UK government continues to rely on a targeted, reactive approach. This has been what we, along with other UK nations, have been doing up to now. That has led to additional restrictions on travel from areas at risk from the variants identified in South Africa and Brazil, covering South America, large parts of Africa, and countries with close travel links to those regions. It's clear that this approach is no longer sufficient. It is vital that we do everything possible to prevent these variants entering Scotland and gaining a foothold.
Vital we stop the variants getting into the country. Now, back to Matt Hancock then. Let's hear two questions. He took a lot of questions from MPs after making his statement. Let's hear two of them. Two of them. The first comes from Felicity Buchan, MP. She asks Matt Hancock a very important question. His arrogance in answering her is breathtaking.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am increasingly concerned about the effect of lockdown on the mental health of children. I am receiving so many emails from adolescents and teenagers. Will my right honourable friend assure me that when he feeds into the February the 22nd roadmap, that the mental health of children and indeed their parents is taken into account?
Very important question. It gets a lot of hear-hears. Heartfelt question from Felicity Buchan. On the 22nd of February, when you're telling us your roadmap out of lockdown, will you take into consideration the devastation on children's mental health brought about by lockdown? What does that useless sack of excrement Matt Hancock say?
Yes, of course I will, Mr. Speaker.
What?
Right, let us head to Wales with...
Even Lindsay Hoyle, the Speaker of the House, was shocked at Hancock's arrogance.
Mr. Speaker.
Listen,
right,
nobody, listen, listen.
Children and indeed their parents is taken into account.
Yes, of course I will, Mr. Speaker.
Right, let us...
Yeah. Yeah. There are things I can't say, so I won't say them. Even Lindsay Hoyle there shocked by Hancock's contempt. But of course, Matt Hancock has no interest whatsoever, because he's a sociopathic scumbag. So the things happening in children's minds and in their lives, no interest to him. He answers to a higher authority, doesn't he? His Conservative MP, colleague Mark Harper, had a question for him that he couldn't ignore. Mark Harper.
I'm grateful, Mr. Speaker. Policies are often easy to announce and difficult to end. I listened carefully to the answer the Secretary of State gave to my honourable friend who chairs the Transport Select Committee. The Chief Scientific Advisor says that COVID is with us forever. It will presumably continue to mutate into new variants forever. And I listened carefully to the answer to the question, but I didn't hear it. When is this policy going to end, if ever? Because if the virus continues to mutate, surely the risk is going to be there forever. And so when can it be removed?
Great stuff. So Hancock announced these ridiculous quarantine measures with threats of 10 years in prison if you try to conceal that you've been in one of the red list countries, with threats of £10,000 fines if you don't quarantine and all this stuff. So his Conservative colleague, Mark Harper, stood up and said, when will these things end? When will they end? Because, you know, you're telling us about variant after variant after variant. Listen to Hancock's answer.
The risk of the mutations absolutely can and will be managed through the evolution of vaccines in the way that the annual flu jab changes each year and allows us to protect ourselves. Of course, these measures, whilst necessary now, are not measures that can be in place permanently. We need to replace them over time with a system of safe and free international travel. And that's where we need to get to. The first task is to vaccinate the population. If we get good news on the vaccination impact on hospitalizations and deaths from people who have the from new mutations, then we will be in a better place. If we do not get such good news, then we will need to use the updated vaccines to protect against the variants of concern.
Wow. If we don't get good news on the current vaccines working against the variants, well, we'll just use the updated vaccines against those variants. What you're hearing, the words to describe it are beyond even this loquacious radio presenter. Never have believed I would be listening to this. And I still pinch myself. I know I've said this before. I still kick myself in the shin to check that I am actually awake and I'm listening to tyranny. This level of tyranny on national television. Listen.
Variants of concern. The scientists inform and advise me that there are repeatedly, independently around the world, mutations of the same type in the E484K area of the virus, as mentioned by the gentleman opposite. Now, that gives the scientists a good start in where to target the new updated vaccine. But if we have to wait until then, it may be that we get enough efficacy from the existing vaccines against hospitalisation and death that they work perfectly well to hold this down. We just don't know that yet, hence the precautionary principle applies.
They are going to roll out around about a half a dozen extra vaccines on top of the current existing coronavirus 19 vaccines. They're going to roll out about five or six more of them for different variants that they will claim are dangerous variants. And those vaccines, in turn, will be offered to the population at large. There's nothing more I can say on that. On the civil disobedience, on the mask wearing and all of that, my great pal, my sometimes muse and sometimes producer, Jean-Anne Crowley, says to me, Richie, man came up today to deliver oil. I says to him, what's with the mask? Take it off, don't be silly. He whipped it off in a jiffy. And he said, a lot of customers expect me to wear the mask, Jean-Anne, even in the wilds of Connemara. Thanks for that, Jean-Anne. Let me scroll on down Twitter. A lot of tweets coming in. Thanks for your tweets. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. I'm in great form, by the way. I'm in good form. Excuse me. All things considered, I'm in good form. When the subject of what to do comes up, because I get it thrown at me all the time, the answer in terms of what to do is very obvious. Richard Cosens, how you doing, Richard, says it needs somebody to go to court, challenge it, and expose all of the lies. Richard, with the greatest respect, that's ridiculous. Nobody's going to court to get us out of this, mate. No judge in the country is going to say, you're right, Richard. No problems made. I'll end it all with a stroke of a pen. I understand why you say that, my friend, but you need to look beyond the justice system in this country. Fiona Marie Flanagan, friend of ours and a brilliant guest on this programme from time to time, she'll be back again soon, no doubt, says the elites do not want us travelling anywhere ever again. If you accept this, then all the ridiculous travel and quarantining measures start to make sense. Fiona, thank you. That's absolutely spot on. Julie Madron says, Richie, I do not comply either. They can shove the vaccine up their arse. I'm more appalled at the sheer neglect of cancer patients as an ex-cancer nurse. Thanks, Julie. Julie, it would be nice to hear from you sometime on the programme. I'd appreciate that. Hi to Scottish John in Austin in Texas. Richie, how the hell is this virus rampant in three countries that weren't even at Wuhan? A friend just told me it was tourists. My response sounded like I had Tourette's, said John. Thank you very much, John. Sooty says, geezer I know is 72. He is made up that he gets his jab tomorrow. Now, for my American listeners, made up means he's rather pleased. He's rather pleased he's getting his jab. Sooty said, I tried telling him about Gibraltar, but I bailed halfway through the conversation. Why should I worry him, says Sooty. Fair enough. I understand that as well. Hi to Faisal. Hi to Jason, who says, what happens when all countries say you have to self-isolate in hotels for 2 weeks? So you go on holiday, self-isolation in the hotel for 2 weeks. then come home and self-isolation in a hotel for another 2 weeks. You've had a month off and no fucking holiday, says Jason. The comment of the day so far. Alan in Liverpool says, I learned today coronavirus definitely shows up on an x-ray of lungs. A guy who told me that also agreed the testing is not up to scratch. Sean tweets, looks like our Easter break holiday in Wales will be cancelled. That's another disabled respite break cancelled thanks to this discriminatory government. Sean, I'm sorry to hear that, pal. Thanks for the tweet. Theodore says, mass non-compliance is what's needed. Hi to Elizabeth. How you doing, Elizabeth? Hi to Chris Morell. How you doing, Chris? He's tweeting Matt Hancock about the PCR test there. And Gaz Bob came back to me to say that he is not complying himself. And I retweeted him and said, yes, you are the change then. You're the change. You are. If you refuse to go along with it, you're doing all you can, really. There isn't any more you can do. You can gently tap people on the shoulder and be nice to them and try and explain that something isn't right. That's a good thing to do, so long as you're nice and respectful. And if they reject you, that you don't get the hump and that you don't get all offended. That you can do these things, but there isn't very much else you can do. But I know if enough people turned their backs on this tyranny, it would end very quickly. John Hardyman says, Richie, so many people are breaking. Good people who know what's going on. The bastards are breaking them. We must help support everyone we can. I'm currently supporting 4 people, says John. Thanks, John. Hi to Debs as well. How you doing, Debs? Hi to Mad Monk, who heard from a pro musician yesterday that he's been told music will go to small outside concerts first. Venues will be set up on festival sites and run mini one-day shows with limited numbers. These will go on for weeks at the same venue, but with different bands. That's interesting, Mad Monk. That is how professional snooker is being run at the moment. Amazingly. Every tournament on the professional snooker tour is currently being held in Milton Keynes. And when a new tournament starts, they just change the branding around the venue and around the table. Yeah, that makes sense, that. Paula says, Richie, my life hasn't changed at all. We had the council around to complain about our little shop because we won't wear masks. We just told the council man to go away. Apart from, it's been a pain to homeschool anyway, says Paula. Tell them to go away. Do what Luke and Kate did. Tell them to go away. And Bod tweets, I love you, brother. I could kiss your bald head, son. Thanks very much. Lauren Blanc over here. Lauren Blanc, you want to kiss my bald head, do you? Thanks for making me laugh, he says. You're very welcome. I do my best, and I am here all week. Shall we have some ABBA, shall we? Oh, a little bit of ABBA will warm the cockles of your soul, or of your heart even. This is the BBG, not the BBC. Richie Allen, live in Salford. Lots more chat coming after this.
I have a dream.
Yeah, that's ABBA and I Have a Dream. And I did play Groove Is in the Heart by D-Light earlier on. My pal John in New York, he knows that I'm gay now. He knows I'm gay. His gaydar is on full alert, red alert. Especially because I played that C&C Music Factory song the other day, didn't I? Everybody Dance Now. That one, I can't remember the title of it. I'm about to emerge, blinking out of the closet, blinking. Blinking. Oh God, I might try it, you know, anything for a fucking break from this COVID, to be honest. Okay, right, I better disavow that because some of you will just believe it. Is Richie gone gay then? Is he? I heard you're gay now, Richie. Ah, sure, why not, you know, why not? I don't know if you're reading richieallen.co.uk, I don't know if you are. If you are keeping an eye on it, you might have seen today that our K, the one and only, that'd be our K, the Ginger Ninja, was spotted working at a homeless food hub in North London in Wembley, which is my old stomping ground, our K.
Fabulous.
It's all good.
Delighted. And some of you cynics believe that this is some sort of remodelling of Kay to relaunch her television news career. I think you're very cynical, although I do understand why you might think that. But Kay has obviously got a lot of time on her hands. She was booted off of Sky because she had the temerity to go out and celebrate her 60th birthday with Beth Rigby and friends, and they didn't socially distance in one venue or another, and eventually Kay was put on gardening leave for 6 months, and we miss Kay in the mornings. I wrote about this on richieallen.co.uk today. So she was at a homeless hub, a kitchen. Hang on. Keep your hair on. Let me figure out now. Let me bring it up, because I've got to get the details of the story right, considering I wrote it. Yes, she's been helping out at a charity, which is the London Community Kitchen, which provides food and support for homeless and vulnerable people. And I said, I don't think it's necessarily a photo opportunity. Necessarily. I mean, look, I'm just as cynical as you are, right? Right? It might not be, you know. Kay's a Wigan girl. Wigan girls never shy when it comes to rolling up your sleeves and getting some work done. Kay Burley is a grafter, whatever else you might think about her. And God knows I've had plenty of things to say about her, Kay. But she's been off her tellies for a bit, and it appears that she's putting her time to good use. Well done, Kay. Well done. I can't wait for Kay to be back, to be honest. That'll be some show, that. What a show we'll have that day. I think we'll dedicate the entire show to it, I think. We'll figure out a way to do that. It is exactly 18 minutes to the top of the hour. Welcome back. Hilarious row about Gary Glitter going on at the moment. I don't know if you came across it. You do remember Gary Glitter? Hey! Go on! Hey! I can't believe you played the music of that stinking paedophile, Richie. Yes, there is a big discussion there, isn't there, about whether we should play the music of pedos. The jury's out for me. I still love Everyone's Gone to the Moon by Jonathan King. I'm sorry. I just like it. I can't help it. Doesn't mean that I'm supporting pedophilia. Anyway, Gary Glitter got the coronavirus vaccine. His real name is Paul Gadd. He's a dirty bastard, right? We know this. He's currently a guest of Her Majesty at the Vern in Portland in Dorset. That sounds like a 5-star hotel, doesn't it? The Vern in Portland, Gary Glitter, Paul Gadd. And he got his COVID jab. And some people are not too happy about that. Here's policeman Brian Booth. Brian is West Yorkshire Police Federation spokesman. Brian Booth, he's on GMB with Piers Morgan and Susanna. He's not happy at all. God damn it, where's Brian? Hang on a second, where are you, Brian? Brian Booth, not happy that Paul Gadd, alias Gary Glitter, got his COVID jab.
A disgusting decision that's been made here.
A disgusting decision.
And my colleague, it's just another kick in the teeth from the government. They really do need to get a grip of this. I understand the argument that key workers need the vaccine and prison officers must be part of that. I would say give the prison officers the vaccine, but not convicted murderers, paedophiles and rapists.
Well, hang on. Sorry, Brian Booth. What are you suggesting, that people who have been convicted of an offence should be left at risk of death because of their conviction?
They should be prioritised in a queue which is right and morally right. These people are giving nothing to society, whereas my colleagues on the front line are giving everything. We've lost police officers and we have police officers currently in hospital fighting for their lives. This cannot be right. These individuals are giving nothing to society are prioritised over my colleagues.
When you describe it as a priority, presumably the priority is that they are in the age band according to the Joint Committee's schedule on vaccination.
Yes, and this is run, again, by doctors and very eminent scientists. And, again, it's the government being led by the science, but there's a moral duty here to protect our key workers.
Moral duty. Give the vaccine to people who contribute to society. Gary's not giving anything to society. Hey, I would argue he did. 1,000 sports arenas around the world would say, yeah, we like that. Do they still use that in NBA arenas? Do they, Rock and Roll Part 2? They might do, they might not. I don't know. I can't answer that. Anyway, Brian Booth is pissed off. West Yorkshire guy. Say what I like and I like what I bloody well say. Nazir Afzal was on the same programme. He's the former chief prosecutor, Nazir Afzal. He disagrees with Brian.
Piers, the disease doesn't discriminate, so neither should the cure. We don't make health judgments on character, on the basis of character. Brian is, I'm sure there are people who are offended by what's happened. But what about ex-prisoners? Do we treat them the same as the current prisoning? No, we've got to apply risk and need. And in the case of Gary Glitter, and yeah, he's one of the people that's in prison because of my teams. He's over 70, so he on that priority list you mentioned, he'd figure up on there. And we know that prisons have high churn rates. We know that staff need to be protected. I totally agree with Brian. I think the police and prison officers should be prioritised. There's 125,000 of them. There were 500,000 jabs yesterday. So on my logic, that's 6 hours it would take to
People will be asking, as Brian Booth did, why should Gary Glitter, a convicted sex offender, get a vaccine before maybe health workers or care workers who still haven't had a vaccine yet? Why should they not be prioritised, as he puts it, from a moral perspective as well as a health perspective? They're in the front line. They're just as exposed to the virus, if not more so, than Gary Glitter. It does stick in the gullet that someone like him is getting a vaccine before people that are far more morally deserving.
I don't disagree with that, but at the same time, we've got a limited supply and we've got to make judgments on the basis of need and risk.
Yes, Gary is 76, Paul Gadd. Now, if only Gary Glitter's victims knew what we know, dear listener, eh? They might be delighted to learn that the filthy child abuser was given a COVID jab. Jab the bejesus out of him. Jab some sense into him, they might say. Keep jabbing him. Every time a variant comes out, jab him some more. Hey, Gary, don't worry about dropping the soap in the shower, son. We've got a vaccine for you. The irony. What time is it? 11 minutes to the top of the hour. Loads of tweets coming in, thanks for them. Shadow Side says, Richie, I drive an ice cream van. Get in there. That was my dream job as a young boy in Ballybug and Ballybeg in Waterford. Ice cream van driving it, yeah. Oh, lovely. All the flavours. All the 99s with the strawberry. With the strawberry stuff all over it. Hundreds and thousands, Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah. Anyway, Shadow Side says, I drive an ice cream van. Since April 2020, I have not worn a mask. I have not used hand sanitizer and not a piece of Perspex in sight. Thank you, Shadow Side. Good man or good woman. Yourself. I like that. Mind that child now. Mind that child while you're at it. 99. Oh, yeah. Be God, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Declan is listening. Richie, I wanted to help feed the homeless and contacted multiple services to offer. No one wanted help with this. It would have been easier for me just to go out on my own, but I wasn't too sure if the Nazis would be patrolling the streets. This sort of article is triggering me, and he's referring to the article about Kay helping the homeless. Charlie says, Gary Glitter's a nonce. I didn't get that memo, says Charlie. Thanks, Charlie. You didn't know that, Charlie. Oh, God, yeah. There's been several documentaries. Oh, yeah. Red-handed. He is a dirty, filthy bastard, Gary Glitter. I don't do the superlatives. That's the wrong word to use. I don't jump all over because everybody does it. It's so obvious. It's too easy to be, you know, screaming about paedophiles because everybody does it. Understandably, I don't, because it's obvious. Horrible people, and you know, I don't give them any. I give them nothing really. Some of the people I've worked with over the years have a modicum of sympathy for them. But not me. Not in a million years. I grew up in Waterford. Good friend of mine was abused by a Catholic bishop. Other friends of mine were abused in the home and outside the home by teachers. Filthy bastards. Execute them? No, absolutely not. Lock them up and throw the key away. And if you do have to release them, make sure you know where they are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's just my opinion. Hi to Richard Snow. How you doing, Richard? Hi to Richard Sunday. It's Dickie Tuesday. It's Dickie Tuesday on the Richie Allen Show. Right, let's move on. Let's move on swiftly. Joanna Lumley is fed up at being stuck at home. Wants to travel to Europe. The absolutely fabulous actress. She was on the BBC Politics programme this afternoon with Joe Coburn. And Joanna is all for the stamping of our passports with our medical information.
I mean, I suppose there's a hope that with the vaccination programme being rolled out, that maybe you might be able to return later in the year to Europe.
I hope so. And it's going to be interesting to see whether we do actually get vaccination passports, because we don't know. I mean, here they say get a doctor's letter. Well, that's going to be really difficult, because all of surgeries are under such pressure that people like me saying, oh, by the way, could you write a letter saying I've had the jabs? I think that in some way we've got to be able to have a simpler system. I would have it in either the health passports we have, which I've got one which shows all the yellow fever, rabies, yeah, all the things, or you have it marked in your own passport so that it's quite easy for whichever country you're visiting to say they've been done, tick.
Tick. They've been done, tick. And of course, it'll be passports for everything and anything, not just travel, but work, but play, everything, maybe even to leave the house. Now, I don't do fear-mongering. I don't do scaremongering, and I'm not trying to scare you, but these people are crazy. How long before somebody suggests you need to be vaccinated to leave the confines, the perimeter of your own dwelling? The garden fence, you know, I don't know. Tell you what, let's talk about whether your employer can insist on you being vaccinated in a moment, okay? Let's talk about that, because there were some interesting things on the telly and on the radio today. I'll be back with you very shortly.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, I think there might be a brand new episode of An Old Man in a Chair from Dr. Vernon Coleman. It might have just landed on brandnewtube.com, brandnewtube.com. Do check it out after the programme. If you go anywhere and go anywhere near that radio to turn it off, I'll fucking kill you. Stay with me till I'm finished and then watch Dr. Vernon Coleman. At brandnewtube.com, brand new episode, I believe. I've just had an email from Vernon and he sent me a link. I think it's brand new. Okay? So check him out. And do check out his website, vernoncoleman.com, as well. Also, for information that you won't get anywhere else, go to activistpost.com and look for the Spiro Skouras channel on YouTube. Spiro Skouras, Spiro, S-K-O-U-R-A-S. You can't go wrong with that. Now, whether your employer can insist that you have a vaccine. A lot of talk about this week, right? And over the weekend. Now, relax, calm down. James O'Brien, LBC. All right. LBC takes phone calls. James O'Brien is a pig. And I shouldn't maybe compare him to pigs. Pigs are intelligent creatures, aren't they? As far as I know, some of my listeners keep pigs. Do you keep pigs, Jean-Anne? No, just chickens and hens and horses, is it? Ponies? O'Brien is dreadful. He gets a phone call from Terry. Terry is a listener. Terry sounds lovely. Terry is not happy with the idea that companies can insist on you being jabbed. So Terry phones up James O'Brien and we can have a little listen to this. It went out this morning.
It's good that you're talking about this. It's a really important debate. Mm. It's probably not going to be resolved this morning.
How dare you?
But I think what you're suggesting is quite a dangerous route to go down. And the reason for that is I think that as individual human beings, we have a basic right to choose what goes into our body, what other people put into our body, and what we, you know, what we do with our body.
Yes.
And I think that is a fundamental right. And if other people, i.e. the government or workplace or whatever, start telling us that this, I'm sorry, we're going to have to impose this on your body because this
No one's saying that. You can swerve the vaccine if you want, but don't bother coming back to work.
Yeah, but if workplaces start saying you can only work,
they're not compromising your freedom to refuse medicine.
No, but if workplaces start saying you can only work for us if you've had the jab,
yeah,
where's that going to end? You could get,
well, it's going to end with workplaces saying that you can only work for us if you've had the jab.
Yeah, but what supposed to be?
No, that's where it's going to end, Terry.
What about supermarkets? If they start saying you can only shop here.
Well, then we'd have a conversation about that. But if ifs and buts were pots and pans, it's not the same thing at all. Because I mean, for a start, the contract between a shopkeeper and a customer is very different from the contract between a shopkeeper and a shop worker.
But it's the same.
No, it really isn't. It doesn't become the same principle if you keep saying it.
Well, Brian has no intentions of allowing this caller to see through his point to flesh out where he wants to go with it. Well, Brian is the most obnoxious radio host that's ever sat behind a microphone in the UK. He is horrible, and it gets worse.
But if you keep
saying, I totally understand what the man is trying to say. And O'Brien is saying, well, they're not preventing you from working. You can go and work somewhere else. Yeah, that's a great thing. That's a great idea in this climate, in this current climate, is that you can just say to your employer, all right then, I don't want to have the job. And the employer says, piss off, and you can go and get another job. First of all, there won't be any other job for you to go to. And secondly, it's likely that any other employer is then going to say, you need to be vaccinated before you come and work on my premises. It's tyranny, is what it is.
Saying it. If you, the management can reserve the right to refuse admission to anyone they want. We've all seen that above the door in a pub, haven't we?
Okay, are we talking about private businesses?
No, we're not talking about anything, Terry, except the employer having the right to say, don't come to work unless you've had a vaccine.
And the employer should never have such a right in any free society. No employer should be able to compel one of his or her employees to have chemicals pumped into their body as a condition of their fucking employment. It's as simple as that. Or, as Vernon Coleman said last night, oh, all right then, I'll go along with that as long as you sign a form saying that you accept liability if one of my fucking arms falls off after I take the vaccine. How about that? Right? Right.
Well, suppose the NHS.
And you're talking about something very different. Yeah, but stop saying suppose the NHS said that.
He's now telling him what he can and can't say.
If this comes in, if more and more private employees.
Exactly, Terry. You're opening Pandora's box by allowing companies dictate whether somebody can come and work for them or not based on whether or not they've had a fucking vaccine. A toxic tidal wave of shit and puss and crap. If you don't have that, you can't work here. Or if you don't have that, you can't remain working here. It's tyranny. Can't allow it. Because it opens up Pandora's box. Because before you fucking know it, you can't do anything. Can't get on a bus. Can't get in a taxi. You've been jabbed, have you? Have you? No? Well, then you're a threat to me. I can't take you on board today, I'm afraid. That's how it ends up.
If the NHS said you can't come to work unless you've been vaccinated, I would lead the applause for them every night of the flipping week, yeah. Never mind just Thursdays. You want people working in the NHS who are infectious.
This dickhead is not a broadcaster at all. He's a London School of Economics graduate. He's a plant, James O'Brien. He's a gatekeeper.
But should that be mandatory?
Yes.
For all nurses?
Well, of course it should.
Should be mandatory. Should be mandatory. You should have no say in it, whether you're jabbed with pus and shit and aborted fetal cells. You should have no say. If you want to work as a nurse, tough shit, you got to have these vaccines. It goes on.
Well, if it does become mandatory, I agree with you, James. It is the best thing to do, but people should be persuaded.
Okay, let's turn it the other way around. I understand your reservations. Do you think that a child whose parents have religious beliefs about blood transfusions should be prevented from having a blood transfusion if it was going to save their life.
Ridiculous comparison to make, for obvious reasons.
No, but it should be offered to them. But if they refuse...
Well, then that's where we disagree.
You can't force them to.
Yes, because you can. You can force them to, and we have forced them to. The courts have forced them to in the past, and parents do not have a right to refuse blood transfusions for their children, whatever their religious beliefs might be.
For themselves.
So there we are. Yeah, I suppose you could refuse it. You could refuse it for yourself. We see the state there stepping in as in loco parentis. But a blood transfusion is going to save your life. A vaccine, potentially.
It's a ridiculous comparison to make. It's black and white when it comes to a blood transfusion, or at least it would be most of the time. Most of the time, a doctor would know that the child couldn't survive without the blood transfusion. That the child is going to die unless it gets the blood or the plasma or whatever. It's got nothing, it bears no comparison whatsoever to whether or not you should be vaccinated or not. None. It's ridiculous. And of course, he's got the upper hand, O'Brien, because he's used to being on the air morning after morning after morning. And he won't let the guy get a word in anyways, right?
...is going to protect everybody else. That's the point of society. So I understand what you're saying. I don't buy it as a big enough objection. And when you have to...
Protecting everybody else is the point of society, says O'Brien. That's why you should be jabbed. You should be jabbed to protect everybody else. But if somebody is jabbed, and guys like O'Brien, and O'Brien is intellectually redundant. O'Brien has probably got an IQ of about 95. He's a moron, right? Neither O'Brien nor anybody else in the media is able to answer or has ever been able to answer this very simple question. Why should the vaccinated fear the unvaccinated? Why? If you're stupid enough to get that fucking vaccine that they rolled out in 3.5 months, something that normally takes 10 years to do, a vaccine that doesn't protect you from getting the virus, does not, and they don't know whether it prevents transmission. If you're dumb enough to get that, well, surely that's all right, then you're protected, right? Why do I need to get the vaccine? They don't have an answer for that. And if they have more than an IQ of 95, if they have an IQ of 105, they might say, oh, well, you should get the vaccine to help protect those who for some reason can't get it themselves. Because there is a tiny, tiny, tiny minority in society who, because of pre-existing medical conditions, they can't get the vaccine. You know what I say? Fuck them. Nothing to do with me. Nothing. Sorry about that. You've got an immune disorder, have you? And you can't have the vaccine? Is that right? But you want me to have it just because you can't have it. Is that right? Fuck off. How'd you like those apples? No, thank you. No. Because I don't care about you? Well, I don't know you, for a start. But secondly, it's not because I don't care about you. I care about me too. I'm not going to take that shit. I'm not going to take it. And I'm going to explain in exactly 15 minutes' time on this programme, in a way that's going to end this fucking discussion once and for all about vaccines, why I won't be taking it. We're going to be talking about the swine flu vaccination. Pandemrics. We'll be talking about that shortly. And I'll tell you then why I won't be taking the vaccine. Madness, isn't it? Oh, have the vaccine to help protect those who can't have it. You can't have it? Tough shit, Paddy. These are this is the way the cookie crumbles. These are the chips. You know, some of us are born bald and then we have a bit of hair for a while and then we lose our fucking hair. Some of us never lose their hair. Some of us are gorgeous. Some of us are not gorgeous. Some of us have athletic prowess. Some of us don't. Some of us have amazing immune systems and nothing can knock us down. Others are weak and the slightest infection can knock them for six. That's the way it goes. You can't tell the guy over there, you've got to have all of this medicine stuck into you. Why? Because that guy over there, he's not well and he can't have it. Did I say fuck off? Did I a moment ago? Because I meant it. Anyway, let's move on. These people are crazy, right? Right? And if you think that James O'Brien, IQ 95, slightly north of Forrest Gump, right? If you think that arsehole doesn't know how ridiculous it is, This notion of you've got to be vaccinated to protect everybody else. If you don't believe that, you've got another think coming. He knows that. He's a gatekeeper. LBC Radio is a gatekeeper. They're all gatekeepers. Now, rant over, mini rant over. Lots more to come on this programme. It's exactly 6 minutes past six, 6:06 on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford here in the Northwest, where it is still absolutely freezing. Freezing. Let's have a tune. I'm playing this one for my oft-mentioned friend in Cleggan in Connemara, who hasn't been so well lately. And she's a big fan of Graham Nash and the Hollies, as am I, Manchester. This is The Air That I Breathe on the Richie Allen Show. Back shortly. Music from the Hollies there, The Air That I Breathe. This is Tuesday's Richie Allen radio programme on the 9th of February 2021. My name is Richie Allen. A lot of new listeners joining this programme and have been joining the programme in recent months. You're very welcome to the programme. You will hear the occasional four-letter word on this programme from time to time. It isn't deliberate. I would advise, and I would say this now, that you've got to take that under advisement if you do have children. It's on at 5 o'clock here in the UK, but it's an online programme. There is a parental advisory note on it right across the podcasts and on the website. Well, there should be on the website. There will be on the website. If you do have young kids, you might want to listen to the podcast, although it isn't as common. You don't hear bad language every day on the programme. Just saying that because I know it annoys certain people. But there you are, you know. It is what it is, and it is what it is. Right, let's swiftly move on then. Time is pressing. Trevor Kavanagh has been writing his political column for The Sun since Moses was in short trousers. He was on talk radio with Mike Graham today, and Trevor Kavanagh is concerned about the power of SAGE. SAGE is a committee made up of scientists, allegedly, the Scientific Advisory Group on Emergencies. SAGE is telling the government what to do when it comes to coronavirus. SAGE is reluctant to end lockdowns, wants them to go on and on and on and on. And he was also talking, Trevor Kavanagh, about how when governments borrow liberty or liberties, they don't give them back very quickly, if ever at all. Trevor Kavanagh with Mike Graham today.
And what do you think is behind the SAGE advisers and their wish to continue with the lockdown? Do you think it's just that they quite like it? Do you think it's that they quite enjoy the kind of power? Or what do you think their psychology is?
Well, I wouldn't want to imply too many motives to the SAGE group, because quite clearly they would see themselves as being the moderators in a very complicated field, which is deciding as and when it's safe to lift the lockdown. But I think there is no doubt that there is in some areas of our society an actual relish of the fact that we're locked down, the fact that the government has been down, the fact that we are able to dictate to people. People, once they're given powers, as we've seen many times in recent months, love to impose them. And I think that there are many members of parliament who are very worried about civil liberties and were very worried at the time that these emergency powers were effectively invoked at the beginning of the first lockdown. And they forecast exactly the situation, which is that people, once given powers to affect the lives of other people, will carry on using them long after their sell-by date. Mm,
quite. Because we seem to have given up altogether any kind of vestige of democracy or any kind of conversations in Parliament about the next stage, you know, because all of the things that we were told would happen, i.e. don't worry, there will be another debate before we impose any further lockdowns, you know, that seems to have gone by the wayside now.
Indeed, and I think that's another very serious subject, Mike. I think that the Speaker, Lindsay Hoyle, is resisting moves by various people, not least the Leader of the House, Jacob Rees-Mogg, who has called for the full return of Parliament. But Lindsay Hoyle is digging his heels in because he has decided the risk is too great. And I think that as long as the Parliament is not sitting properly, and if necessary, why don't we give the MPs the jab so that they can carry on as key workers?
Give the MPs the jab so that they can carry on as key workers and return to Parliament to debate the lockdown. Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath on Lindsay Hoyle recalling Parliament. Anyway, Mike Graham's colleague, Julia Hartley Brewer, had the Labour Shadow Business Secretary, Lucy Powell, on her programme. Because Hartley Brewer wanted to make the point, and it's a good point, that there is no opposition whatsoever to what the government is doing around coronavirus lockdowns. Julia Hartley Brewer and Lucy Powell.
You talked about the economy reopening in the next few weeks or months. You talked about it being on the horizon. If Labour were in power right now, when would we be reopening? When? What are the criteria? What's the timetable for reopening our economy and getting back to normal life?
Well, I mean, I think our criteria and our roadmap probably wouldn't be that different from the government's, because we'd be looking at the same evidence and getting the same guidance as them. But you're absolutely right. What businesses want the most, in fact, what most people who are on furlough want the most, is to get back to work, is to get back trading. So I think what people want is some certainty around that, is to know that this, in a way, will be the last time that when they reopen, they're able to reopen with good notice. They're able to reopen in a way that's viable. So we can't have any of this nonsense about pubs reopening without serving alcohol, for example, yeah, or the substantial meal criteria and all these sort of extra sort of last minute restrictions.
What about the 10 p.m. curfew that your party supported as well?
Well, we had some concerns about the fact that was just too early and was just kicking everyone out at the same time. So I think the government had already dropped that previously. So hopefully, businesses will be able to open in a way that they can operate around that is viable and is a way that they understand.
When you say that, you know, we'd basically be operating on the same sort of timetable as the government in terms of lockdown re-easing because we'd be taking the same advice, you do understand the difference between taking advice and governing. And this is the issue I've got with the government and I think the opposition. I mean, I'm not quite sure what the opposition is currently on this, because what's the point of the Labour Party if you're not opposing any of the government measures, really? Is it the advice is what the advice is on terms of...
What's the point of the Labour Party if you're not opposing any of these measures? Exactly.
The advice is on terms of public health. But it isn't. It is the job of publicly elected and accountable politicians to make decisions about weighing up various different risks. There are huge risks to continuing lockdown, as well as, we're told, huge risks to ending lockdown. Do you not think that your Labour might make a different calculation than the Tory party?
What a question. Ma on Colleen, Julia. Great question. And the answer?
Sure. As I say, we've got quite a big different opinion with the government about...
We've got a quite big different opinion.
...the economic support and how we need to support the recovery.
Oh, she's dreadful, isn't she? Brewer said to this absolute bint, Lucy Powell, she said, why isn't the Labour Party opposing the government on the lockdown? You're an opposition party. Surely you should be finding ways to avoid lockdown and posing those questions as the opposition. And this absolute cretin, Lucy Powell, says, oh, we do disagree with them on the furlough scheme, on the payments to keep people at home and not working. Oh,
sure. As I say, we've got quite a big different opinion with the
big different opinion
government about the economic support and how we need to support the recovery, how we need to support jobs, how we come out of this at this pandemic. And we aren't subject to all the daily sort of information, the scientific data and so on, unfortunately.
That's bullshit. They get copies of everything
as the opposition. But I think there is a broad consensus that we need to reopen in a timely way, in a way that people have good notice, but that is something that doesn't put our public health at risk.
Oh, God. We need to reopen in a timely fashion, give people plenty of notice, but make sure that it doesn't put anybody at risk. Oh. Hey, do you want to hear from some boffins? This is where I get a bit serious now. This is serious now. Let's hear from these boffins then. The Trevor Kavanagh was speaking about a moment ago. Sage members and independent Sage members and other academics, we see them on the BBC and Sky all the time while everybody else is banned. There's about a dozen of them that are always on the tele. Okay, you know who they are. Gabriel Scally, Devi Shridhar, your man Adam Finn. Oh, God. You know who these guys are, don't you? Mike Tilsley, we're going to hear from him in a minute. You see the same academics all the time. now, telling us lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. Variants, variants, variants. Dangerous, dangerous, dangerous. Don't get out of bed, don't get out of bed, don't get out of bed because you might be killed by the virus. These academics, right? Right. Now, on BBC Breakfast Television this morning, the television programme, Dan Walker and Louise Minchin had two boffins on at the same time. Adam Finn from the JCVI, Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, and Mike Tilsley, epidemiologist, always on. They were on to talk about the scary new variants. It seems the Kent variant is scarier than the South African variant at the moment, but that might change. Mike Tilsley first speaks about concerns that our current vaccines are less effective against the new variants. Mike Tilsley.
Well, it's really important that we are really proactive when it comes to control. I would say we might expect that at some point we're probably going to get variants emerge where the vaccines are a little bit less effective. And I mean, Adam's absolutely right. I completely agree with him that the message should not change. We really need to encourage as many people as possible to take up the vaccines when they are offered so that we can build the levels of immunity we need. But in terms of controls, in terms of pace of easing out of lockdown, we really need the government to be prepared to be responsive and react to emerging changes so that we minimise the risk of a resurgence in cases should we get a dominant variant where the vaccines are less effective spreading around the population.
Can we also talk, Mike Tilsley, about what's going on in Manchester? Because you know that surge testing is going to take place in parts of Manchester because of the Kent variant, which has been found here. So what how concerned are you by that? And will surge testing crack down on it?
Well, I mean, the problem is, of course, with any kind of testing is as soon as we see there's a problem with cases surging, we're always a little bit behind the curve because, of course, when individuals are reported, they were infected several days ago, could have been up to a week or more ago. So if we can get rapid uptake of surge testing and we can get really good adherence to isolation, it's possible we can get ahead of this. But it really does need, when the surge testing is offered, as many people as possible to take it up. And of course, really importantly, if people test positive, make sure that they isolate for the full period.
Yes, do what you're told. When you're offered a surge test, take your surge test, apply it to yourself and give it back to the person when they come and knock on your door. Doesn't matter that you don't feel unwell. It doesn't matter that you are over the moon, that you're in the pink, rosy-cheeked. No, if we tell you that a scary new coronavirus variant is in your neighbourhood, you take that damn test and help us stamp it out. Tilsley. On the same segment, on the same programme at the same time, Adam Finn, JCVI, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation. Listen very carefully to what he says. This guy advises the government now, and he advises folks who advise the government too. Listen to this.
Yeah, I think that is the likely outcome. I think it's much less likely that we'll completely eradicate this infection and it'll just disappear. I think it's more likely it'll evolve. We'll kind of learn to live with it. I think we will continue to need vaccines. And actually, I think we will also probably have to modify our behaviour more broadly long term.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you see, you got to be paying attention to that.
Need vaccines. And actually, I think we will also probably have to modify our behaviour more broadly long term.
Modify your behaviour.
To try and reduce transmission of this and actually other infections as well. So the constant call to go back to the normal is probably a false one. I think we're going to have to now live going forward with the reality of viral infections and making an effort to avoid passing them around.
Wow. The constant call to go back to normal, he said, is a false one. We'll be living with these measures forever. That's what they want. Not him. You see, Adam Finn is a useful idiot. He's a geek, a nerd, a boffin. He's probably never been laid in his life. That's all he is. And he answers to a higher authority and they tell him what to say and he says it. He knows it's nonsense. On some level, he knows it's insane. Yes, let's keep social distancing and hand washing every time we enter a room and wearing masks. Let's keep those forever because of all these, or for a very long time, because of all these variants. And let's keep taking fucking vaccines. Let's just keep taking vaccines forever and ever, amen. Every time some dickhead on the 25th floor sends a piece of paper down the chain to say we found a new variant. let's modify the existing vaccine and give everybody in the country a brand new one. Guys like Adam Finn, eh? What do you say to that? It went on, he was on for a bit more with Finn.
Can I ask you also, from the point of view of the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, we know there are those nine levels, aren't there? So the over 50s, that's the target to be vaccinated. After that, who then will get access to the vaccine? Because there's a lot of different indications, whether it should be, I don't know, frontline workers, whether it should be emergency workers, you know, or teachers, for example.
Yeah, I mean, that discussion's ongoing at the moment. And of course, it goes beyond just medicine and public health as to who society values most and who they think are most important. In terms of the JCVI, we're very focused on the evidence of who's at the highest risk. And at the moment, the outstanding factors predicting that is still age. And of course, you need a system that you can operationalize so you can identify the people and quickly get the vaccine to them. So I can't give you an answer to exactly how that will look, but over the coming few weeks, we're making those plans, and I think they'll be announced. They'll have to be announced by the end of February or early March.
Why do these bastards laugh all the time when they're delivering very bad news? Have you noticed that? And I don't mind. As professional as I am, and I am the most professional broadcaster in the UK, I really am. I really am. I'm going to send myself flowers. Forget the bad language occasionally. As professional as I am, they are bastards, these guys. Why are they laughing all the time? You hear it all the time.
Don't answer you? To exactly how that will look, but over the coming few weeks, we're making those plans, and I think they'll be announced.
What's fucking funny about that?
They'll have to be announced by the end of February or early March so that we know what we're doing next.
I think he's laughing because he can't believe he's getting away with it. I think they're laughing because they cannot believe they're getting away with it. Do you think I'm right? Do you think I'm wrong? Tweet me, it's at BBG Richie. Catherine says on Twitter, all I can hear from these experts, Richie, now is be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Oh, and don't forget to be afraid. We are in control. Absolutely. Absolutely, Catherine. Faisal tweets, funny how previous vaccines like smallpox and maybe even measles, maybe even chickenpox, Faisal. Anyway, Faisal says, funny how previous vaccines like smallpox just worked without having to worry about variants. It's almost as if they are just making it up as they go along, relying on the public to just forget the past. Well said, Faisal. In a moment, I'm going to tell you why I couldn't, under any circumstances, no matter what the punitive measures were, could not take a vaccine. We're going to take a trip down memory lane, you and me, after this from America. This is a horse with no name on the Richie Allen Show. The biggest, baldiest gammon in town, live from Salford. First part of the journey. Great song, that, from America. Horse with no name. What a tune that is. 27 and a half, 28 minutes it is to 7 o'clock. Going to be with you for another 5 or 10 minutes, I think, today. Busy old day today. Right, let's move on. This is kind of important then, I think, as to where this is happening, where it's going. The reason I am so resolute in my determination not to have a vaccine. And I know some of you will be thinking, Richie, we've heard your programmes for a long time. It's no surprise to us that you wouldn't have a vaccine. Yes, that's fair enough. The programme almost, I think, grew by one third in the months since all of this nonsense began last year. So from March, the programme added 33% on top of its audience. And the audience was always a big audience anyway. The programme's been around a long time. There are a lot of people now discovering this programme particularly, because there isn't anywhere else for them to go. There isn't any other radio programme that broadcasts live daily for 2 hours discussing these things and interviewing people. There isn't, sadly. I wish there were more of them, but there aren't. There's just this one, right? So people are discovering it. Many of these people have had vaccines themselves, and they tell me. They reach out to tell me on social media. They reach out to tell me via email. Say, Richie, I've had vaccines before, mate. And, you know, what's going on? And I'm going to tell you the reason I won't, and I'm going to use a couple of audio clips, audio bites even, to explain it. And I won't give it too much of a big build-up because it doesn't need it. Thanks to Graham Neary, a trader, stocks and bonds, for posting some audio on Twitter, which I was able to grab. Graham Neary. If you look him up, you'll just find him straight away. I'm not connected to him on Twitter, but somebody sent me a link to something that he was doing. He put a thread on there. Before we get to what Graham Neary put out there, I want you to just hear this. You know, as they're telling people at the moment, right now, don't worry about your vaccine not working against future variants. This really is Twilight Zone stuff. It really is Black Mirror stuff. You remember a few minutes ago I said, I am struggling sometimes. I do scratch my head. I do pinch my face. I do kick myself smartly in the shins. Because I do, honest to God, sometimes think I'm dreaming it. I'm dreaming it, right? But I'm not dreaming it. And you hear stuff like this. Yesterday, we were on air, you and me. We were here yesterday. And Jonathan Van Tam, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, was part of Matt Hancock's Downing Street briefing. He was there. And he wanted to reiterate to people, don't worry if you get a vaccine. Get the vaccine, get the vaccine. And don't worry about other strains, because you can be, well, you can get other vaccines. And you have to hear this. And just listen to the madness of it. This is Jonathan Van Tam, the vaccinator in the current UK government.
My advice to you is very simple. Do not delay. Have the vaccine that will protect you against the current threat. And don't worry, you can be revaccinated. My advice to you is very simple. Do not delay. Have the vaccine that will protect you against the current threat. And don't worry, you can be revaccinated.
Don't delay. Why are they so desperate to have the entire population receive this vaccine? I'm asking you tonight. I know you are there. I can see you almost. I can visualise you. You're new to radio like this. Please ask yourself, why are they so hell-bent, dogged in their determination, ripping up civil liberties, setting fire to human rights law and laws? Why are they doing that to coerce you into having a vaccine for a virus that, if it exists, has a 99.7% survivability rate? Is that only people aged 82 really die from? And I know other people die from it as well. The average age of somebody dying with it, having tested positive, within 28 days, which is laughable. Even still, the average age is 82. You need to ask yourself, why? Why is Van Tam looking down a camera lens demanding that people go and get this vaccine? Get it anyway. Don't worry about the fact it doesn't work for the other variants. You can be revaccinated. Jonathan Van Tam, revaccinated. These people are evil incarnate. There's no other word to describe them, because he knows what he's doing, Jonathan Van Tam. And thanks to Graham Neary for this Twitter user trading in stocks and bonds, as I already said. He dug this out. And Gabriel Scally is an Irishman. As much as anybody, he's being used to push the vaccines. He's on Sky News or the BBC television or the BBC radio programmes every other day, no exaggeration. He's president of epidemiology and public health at the Royal Society of Medicine. He is cited, Gabriel Scally, as some sort of supreme authority. And I believe, as he is Irish, he is often heard on national TV and radio in Ireland as well. Gabriel Scally is sick. He is an evil, twisted, sick little puppy. Here is Gabriel Scally back in 2010 pushing another vaccine very carefully. Listen very carefully. Listen very carefully. He's pushing another vaccine really hard. Listen.
Hello, I'm Gabriel Scally. I'm the Regional Director of Public Health for the Southwest. And I wanted to say a few words to you about the swine flu vaccination programme that's going on at the moment. You may well be aware that the vaccination programme is aimed in the very first component of it is aimed at NHS staff. And that's because NHS staff come into contact with really vulnerable people all the time. And we have a real duty of care here to make sure that there's no chance that we can pass on swine flu to some people for whom this might have devastating consequences. The vaccination programme is available in every trust in the South West using a vaccine that has been approved both nationally and internationally for use. It is different from the seasonal flu vaccine that you've been offered in the past, and I would strongly encourage you not only to take up the swine flu vaccination, but also, when it becomes available over the next month or two, also to take the seasonal flu vaccination. The best protection that you as an individual can have against swine flu is to be vaccinated, and the best protection for your patients is also that you're vaccinated. After we've done the staff of the NHS, we're moving on to particularly vulnerable groups, those with particular chronic conditions, those who are immunosuppressed and the close relatives of people who are immunosuppressed, and we'll work our way steadily through those groups, and in due course the vaccine will be made available to the general public.
In due course we'll make the vaccine available to the general public. And here's his big finish, Gabriel Scally, back in 2010.
I'm very convinced that our best chance of stopping the outbreak of swine flu in its tracks is the vaccination programme that's now underway. And I very much hope, that you'll play your part by accepting the offer of vaccination that your employing organisation will make to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Gabriel Scally. I wonder, did Gabriel Scally, in the intervening years, apologise to the thousands of people whose lives were destroyed by the swine flu vaccine pandemics? I wonder, did he pick up the phone to anybody to say, I'm sorry for recommending that you take the pandemics vaccine made by GlaxoSmithKline. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. Sorry to learn that your son or your daughter or your granddad or your grandmother died. I'm sorry that your child developed narcolepsy as a result of you taking the vaccine. I'm sorry that I, as a public health official, a trusted figure, looked you in the eye and told you to take that fucking vaccine, that everything would be hunky-dory and that it would protect you from swine flu. I'm really sorry. I wonder, did Gabriel Scally do that in the intervening years, I wonder? 6 million people in Britain took that fucking vaccine, pandemics, made by Glaxo. 6 million people took it. They eventually took it off the market after they noticed that people were coming down with narcolepsy, amongst other things. How many died from it? How many developed narcolepsy? How many developed other long-term debilitating conditions to it? And the same lying bastard who pushed it back then is pushing coronavirus vaccines in 2021. And to be fair to Gabriel Scally, he's not the only one. So that's why I couldn't, in good conscience, were I to be new to this information, were I to have fallen down in the last shower, knowing what I know about pandemics and swine flu, and the people back then who told us to take it, it will protect us, it'll protect your patients, it'll protect the wider public, it'll protect everybody. What have they said about it in the meantime? What have they said about it since? I wonder. Have they apologised? Did they go and see people, knock on their doors and say, geez, I'm really sorry for pushing that vaccine that basically fucked you right up. I'm sorry about that. So no, I wouldn't be having it, no matter what the consequences are for me. And Jean-Anne tells me we'll go out with this. Today is Brendan Behan's birthday. Thanks, Jean-Anne. Here is an appropriate quote, she says, from the man himself, Brendan Behan. I don't have to tell you what Brendan Behan is. If I do, there's something wrong with you. I have a total irreverence for anything connected with society, except that which makes the road safer, the beer stronger, the food cheaper, and the old men and old women warmer in the winter and happier in the summer. Brendan Behan, his birthday, is today. Happy birthday, son. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for putting up with me. Until then, bye now.